accession number 18260, real one.
Frank Gilliatt, real one. Where were you born, please?
Immingham.
Which year was this?
1928.
Did you grow up and go to school in Immingham?
Yes.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
In 1942?
Yes, that's right.
And so did you spend the war years in Immingham?
Yes.
What was that like?
Quite exciting at times, actually, if you could call it exciting. Of course, we was on the coast, and we got a lot of enemy aircraft coming over for the Midlands and local, and we had a lot of searchlights and anti-aircraft guns round about, and it was quite noisy when these raids were on because they put up an anti-aircraft barrage, you see, and it was very noisy. And we had Anderson shelters when we went into, and at the bottom of the garden we had a searchlight all through the war, which proved interesting, you know, because I could watch from my bedroom window what was going on through the air raid, you know, and I saw the barrages being put up, and I saw Hull being bombed, Grimsby being bombed, but we had very little where we were actually at Immingham. We didn't have a lot of, we did have some bombs one night and some incendiary bombs, but it was fairly quiet where we were, but I could see the other towns and cities being bombed.
You mean most of the bombs that fell on Immingham just fell on one particular night?
Yes, one or two particular nights, not very often.
You don't remember when that was, do you?
Well, it would be in 43, 40, 42, 43, yes. Mm.
What was your address in Immingham at the time?
27 Margaret Street, Immingham. That's where I was born.
Did your family have anything to do with the docks in Immingham?
My father was a railway worker. He worked on the railway trains.
And can you tell me about the naval activity concerning the docks?
It was a naval base, and one celebrity which came there was Lord Louis Mountbatten. He came in with HMS Kelly after they'd been on a Russian convoy. And I was a choir boy at the time, and I can remember him coming to Immingham Parish Church with a consignment of sailors as a Thanksgiving sort of parade, you know.
How was he regarded in the war?
Well, I don't think many people realised who he was at the time, you see, because everything was very hush-hush about the naval base and one thing or another. And but I could remember seeing him there with his gold braid and all that, you know, and I did make inquiries and found out who he was like, you know.
Was he an impressive figure?
Yes, he was, yes. Mm. And he marched from Immingham Dock to the church with this about 20 or 30 sailors, you know, leading the sailors.
What was life like for you as a teenager in the war?
Well, I left school at 14, and I went to work at a butcher's shop. I was just a butcher's boy at 14, and I used to go onto the docks delivering meat, and so I did see quite a bit of what was going on down there. But it was night time when the action was, sort of thing, you know, and I was a bit of a souvenir hunter, and I did go, so when anything happened, I was one of the first to be there if I could get there to see what there was, sort of thing.
What kind of souvenir?
Well, if any aircraft crashed, we did have a Heinkel crash one Saturday night that was shot down on the docks at Immingham by, I think it was the Scots Guards with machine guns and rifles. Actually, I've got it in a book, a recording of it. And it crashed just over the top of where we were, like, and got some parts of that. And shrapnel was the other thing we collected, because when we, as we got up each morning going to school or whatever, there was shrapnel all over the streets from these anti-aircraft guns, I can remember.
Whereabouts near Immingham did the Hinkle come down?
At the top end of Immingham, it just caught a tree as it was coming into... It was night time, it was a Saturday night, I remember, because we were having a bath, and bath night was Saturday night. And I think two or three of them got out. I think two got killed or something, but did he get the two or three of them, or two got out anyway, I think.
And were there any celebrations at the end of the war?
Yes. We had street parties and that sort of thing, yes, at Immingham. But apart from going back during the war, I had joined the ATC during the war because I was, like a lot of the lads, wanting to go into the Air Force to fly. And we was able on a Sunday to come to these aerodromes around here, which was all around this area, and sometimes get a flight in a Lancaster if there was any flying on a Sunday. We used to go on a Sunday to the aerodromes. In actual fact, I came to the one here at Waltham. I used to cycle from Immingham to Waltham on a Sunday morning, and the officer used to try and get us a bit of flying if any Lancasters were going up on a bit of a training flight or anything. And we used to look forward to it, you know, it was very, very exciting at the time.
Did you ever think the Germans might invade this area?
We thought they might, because going back to the war again, the Coldstream Guards was in this area. On after Dunkirk, they all came down this coast because it was such a flat piece of land in this area that they thought it could be chosen for landing, you see, because of being able to get the on the coast. It's very flat, and they thought that it would be an ideal place to land. And there was quite a lot of defensive positions down this coast at that during the war, yes. And that's how I first came into contact with the Coldstream Guard, actually, because being on my butcher's bike, I could see all these guardsmen putting up these defences around Immingham and Stalingborough.
How did you come to join the army yourself, and when?
When the war finished in 45, I was then 17, and I knew that I was going to have to go in the forces, and because the war had finished and there was no more demand for air crew or pilots or whatever we wanted to be, I thought I would go into the army and go in as a volunteer instead of waiting to be called up, so that I could choose which regiment I went into. And as many years ago, my relations had been in the Coldstream Guards, and I was fairly tall. I was 5'9", and I chose to go in the Coldstream Guards.
Was it easy to get in?
At that time, yes, I think it was, because as everybody was coming out and being demobbed, I think they was getting pretty well depleted, and the demand was there to get more recruits, yes.
So when was it you joined?
September 26, 1945.
Where did you do the basic training?
At Caterham in Surrey.
What was that like?
Pretty stiff. And very, you know, trying at times, but I was determined I was going to make it.
What was the most trying thing about it?
I think learning to accept discipline and drill all the time, yes.
Was there much bull?
Oh, yes. I mean, there's quite a lot of bull, and knocking you into shape mainly, and getting to accept commands and discipline. Yes. Mm.
Do you think that was necessary?
Yes, definitely. Yes.
In your case?
Yes. Yes.
Were you ever punished at that time?
No. I kept a clean sheet all the time.
And then were you ready to do ceremonial duties?
Well, from there, you went to Pirbright for platoon and rifle firing on the ranges and that sort of thing. For another 7 or 8 weeks. And then you're ready for public duties, yes.
Which type of training did you prefer? The training at Caterham or at Pirbright?
Pirbright, which is more relaxed. It's a better relaxed atmosphere, and drill sort of wasn't quite as often as what it was at the Guards Depot, but still pretty good. You know, it was still plenty.
And where did you first do ceremonial duties?
At Windsor Castle.
What form did that take?
Well, it was still peacetime, still after the war and just into peacetime, and we're still in khaki, but from Pirbright I went to Windsor, which was then a holding battalion, and I was doing Windsor Castle Guards there for about 6 or 7 months. And then...
What did you have to do on the Windsor Castle Guard? Just walk up and down?
Yes, it was various posts around the castle. Yeah, you went to the castle for 2 days, sort of into the guard room, like, and lived in the castle. And it was like 48-hour guard and 48 hours off, like.
What was accommodation like in the castle?
Very good. It was quite good, yes.
And would you... Guard, were you a rail guard? Did you have loaded rifles?
Or no, I don't think we had loaded rifles. It's more or less just ceremonial. Mm. I'm not saying there wasn't any ammunition in the guard room, but we certainly didn't carry any ammunition on the guard.
How did you like ceremonial work?
Oh, I enjoyed it. It was very good. Very good.
Did you like being on shore?
Yes. I think when you're young, it's just pride, isn't it? And being able to show yourself off, I suppose.
Did the royal family show any interest in the guards?
I don't remember them being there while I was there in that 6 months. They may have been in and out, but I didn't see anybody as such now.
What happened after Windsor Castle?
I say this battalion at Windsor was a holding battalion, and they wanted a draft of volunteers to go to Italy to join the 2nd Battalion, which was then at Trieste in Italy. And I volunteered to go to Trieste and then went on embarkation leave. But when I came back off embarkation leave, things had been changed, and the 2nd Battalion was then coming home instead of going, instead of going to Italy, I went back to Pirbright to get the accommodation ready for the 2nd Battalion coming back from Italy. And that's where they came back, and that's when I joined the 2nd Battalion out to Pirbright in, I think, 1940, the end of 46, I would say.
Were you disappointed in not being posted to
I was slightly, yes, because I was looking forward to going out there, but it wasn't to be, and that was it. So I didn't mind. Once you've finished at Pirbright, your basic training, you're ready to go to a battalion, whichever wants you, sort of thing.
Did you go to a particular company and platoon in the 2nd Battalion?
Yeah, I was in 2 Company.
Do you remember the platoon?
No, I don't remember now. I think, we would be in platoon, but it was mainly just in a company. Because when you're doing public duties, it doesn't matter about platoons very much. You're just part of number 2 Company. And that's when where I was in two company.
And did you stay in Surrey long?
Stay?
In Surrey long?
No, we... What we did was just practice ceremonial duties at Pairbright for about 3 or 4 months, and then we went up to London to Wellington Barracks.
For what purpose was this?
For public duties, for doing public duties in London.
Buckingham Palace.
Yeah, Buckingham Palace, St James's Palace, Bank of England, and whatever was happening.
Which of those did you prefer? Was there much difference in the different places?
Not a lot. There was much the same. Either to Buckingham Palace or St James's Palace, the accommodation was much the same. I did those, and I did bank pickets and any other duties outside the camp that was required. Sometimes there were some fatigues outside of the barracks that you had to do. There was just odd things that they needed you for, apart from the guard's duties, like, you know. Oh, thinking back now, there was quite a few strikes in them days, and we was required to go to Smithfield Market, the docks, and postal strike. We was used quite a lot for these strikes, yes, in them days.
To deliver the mail?
We was in Victoria's coach station sorting the mail out when there was a postal strike. We was at Smithfield Market when there was a meat strike, getting the meat out of the market and delivering it to shops. And when the dock strike was on, we was down the docks unloading boats or whatever was doing on the docks, and bringing we used to get fruit and bring it back to the to Wellington Barracks, I can remember. But we was doing that sort of thing as well as the public duty, yes.
And were the guardsmen very competent at doing the work?
They were very adaptable, yes.
What about the strikers? Did you get any?
We weren't very popular, I don't think, but there was no animosity, I don't think, as such. We never had no fighting or anything. It was just friendly bantering, I think, sort of thing. Mm.
But the guardsmen could cope with the work, couldn't they?
Yes, yeah, they seemed to be pretty adaptable. It didn't do the work as thoroughly as the workers did it, but it got the goods away, sort of thing. They did sort things out a bit.
This must have been in 1947, was it?
This was, yes, 47, yes. I believe it would be, yeah.
And when you were on the guard on the bank, mm-hmm. were you an actual proper armed guard then?
I don't remember ever being armed on guards. We had bayonets, but I think we was only there as sort of security, you know, inside security. We weren't outside the bank, we was in the bank, in the chambers, down below sort of thing. I never saw daylight. It was, I don't really know where we were. We were just posted at different parts through in the bank itself sort of thing. But I don't think we was armed, no.
But you were there in case it was a bank robbery?
Yes, I think we was there. We would have been able to deal with anything that was happening, sort of thing, yes.
What happened next?
Well, I was there till 1948, and then this emergency started in Malaya, and that's when we went out to Malaya, at the end of 47, 48 anyway. I can't remember exactly now. We was out between 48 and 50 for 2 years.
Can you tell me about going now, please?
We went down by this time, I'd volunteered to be a cook and a butcher in the battalion. And some advance party went down to Southampton, the main party went down, and then there was a rear party. And I was on the rear party. And we sailed from Southampton. And I think it was approximately 5 weeks getting to Singapore.
What was the voyage like?
They used to pass the time away with sports and various things on, and we used to fire off the end of the ship at targets. We had a Major Gibbs that used to read us a story every day, if we could get in the get us all in the lounge and read us a story. A lot of the time you were just relaxing, there wasn't a lot to do, but they did try to keep us some activity going if they could, like boxing and wrestling and whatever, you know, just to keep you occupied. But there wasn't a lot of things you could do on board ship. It's a bit...
What kind of stories was he reading you?
I don't know, but I can remember we used to go into this place and there used to be these columns, and everybody used to try to get behind these columns so that they have a little sleep, so that he couldn't see them. But he was reading, I think it was called The Elephant Boy or Elephant Jim or something like that. It was a jungle story anyway. Yeah.
Where did you land in Malaya first?
We landed at Singapore and went from there to Nee Soon Transit Camp on Singapore Island.
What happened there?
I think we was just sort of waiting for arrangements to be made to where we was going to go, and arranging the transport up into Malaya. We weren't sort of able to do very much there because it was only like a tented, what do you call them, transit camp, as you would call it, yes.
Any training you did there?
No, we were just sort of waiting to move up into Malaya.
So after Nee Soon, what happened then?
We all embarked on this train one afternoon, and it took us about a day and a half, I think, or a good long day anyway. It seemed to be a day and a half up to the middle of Malaya, which was Tapa Road, which was in Perak. Evidently well-known railway junction of some sort where people got off for the middle of Malaya, like it was a sort of a railway junction, I believe.
Was that where you were based?
Yes, that's where we were for the most, nearly all the 2 years I was in this Tapa. It was called Tapa Road Camp, and it was a tented camp about, I should think, 4 or 5 miles from the railway station. In this village of Timo. It was called Timo. It was called Tapa. It was Timo Hill Camp at Tapa. The name of the village itself was called Tapa.
What were your living conditions like there?
Pretty basic. It was tents. I think about 6 to a tent with paving slabs as a basic sort of thing. And it was terraced down. It was on a hillside which was terraced. And it was quite a good camp, actually. I was thinking in the conditions in them days, very good.
And you started your duties as a cook and butcher?
There, yes. I was a cook for two company when it was needed for me to go out as a company cook, but when I was in the battalion, I was the butcher. And I had to go and fetch me meat and go to different meat depots to find me meat. I had to go on a lorry with an escort, like, to pick up this meat in a refrigerated container. And if I was needed, I used to go on operations which was local, where we surrounded a village at dawn and got all the occupants out and put them through a screening process where you had to find out whether they were sympathising with the communists or whether there was any communists that they were, you know, they were looking for. But I went on two or three of those operations, but mainly I was in the camp. I did go up once with two company to the Cameron Highlands, which is a cooler part of Malaysia. It's about 4 or 5 hours drive up into the mountains. And I was up there for about a month with two company cooking. I was the corporal cook, and I'd say like three guardsmen cooks with me.
That was like a hill station.
That's right, it was a hill station, yes. And that's where the children seemed to go to school up in the Cameron Islands. And on the holidays they came down, they were escorted down to Kuala Lumpur.
So this meat that you got, you didn't have to buy it locally yourself?
No, it was all through the Ministry of Defence. It was a depot at Ypres, the next nearest town, where I had to go and fetch it every 2 days. I had a big container on a 1500 weight and with blocks of ice in that I had to put this meat in and bring it back.
Where had the meat originated from?
It would come from RESC was the then the people who supplied the food, and it would be in their depots in Singapore, I suppose, yes.
But was it English meat or
Argentine? Oh no, it was all frozen meat. It was it could have been Australian, New Zealand. The lamb would definitely be New Zealand, and some of the beef meat was, yes.
Was it good meat?
Yes, yes, it was all good meat. And what I did was divide it up for the sergeant's mess and the officer's mess and the main mess for the guardsmen, and prepare it for them, like, you know, get it all ready for them for whatever was on the menu.
And would the guardsmen get the same standard of meat as the sergeants and the officers?
They got the same meat, but the cooks were different, and the officers' mess cooks did a little bit more elaborate meals for the officers and sergeants than what the men got, but mainly much the same. It wasn't a vast difference, but the cooks in the officers' mess are a little bit more qualified and could do a little bit more with it, if you know what I mean. They could do a little bit more elaborate meals with whatever they got. But, we did have our own pigs there as well. We used to keep pigs in the in the camp, which was in the valley, and they bred pigs. You know, the sergeant who was in charge, the drill sergeant was in charge of these pigs. He bred these pigs, and whenever they felt like killing a pig, they called upon me to kill a pig for the sergeant's mess. And
how did you kill it?
Well, sometimes the quartermaster would shoot it with his pistol, and then I would cut its throat and bleed it to death like it normally you would. But taking it that these pigs were running about, they weren't. You had to sort of just walk up to them and kill them. You couldn't sort of put them in a pen or anything like that, and it was rather primitive, but I did manage to do it, and it was a bit, I'd say amateurish, but I got them killed, and we got them up and cleaned them and did them, and